This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, Joy FM listeners. My name's Hilary McNevin and you are listening to Cravings. We've got some extraordinary people on the show this afternoon. We're talking seafood, we're talking Chardonnay, we're talking Dubai, we're talking new restaurants. Fasten your seatbelts, we're going to have a ball. We are talking cravings and welcome to Joy 94.9. My name is Hilary McNevin. I am filling in for the lovely Pete Dillon. It is his show. Every now and again he has to go off and do something and be fabulous somewhere, and he's off at the Grampians this weekend, I believe, and he has given me the honour of hosting today's show. And we've got a bit of a feast. Pardon, even if that's not even a pun, it's just really terribly obvious. But we've got a really great show today. We're revisiting seafood and winter and cold weather. And we're also talking about wines to match with that, particularly the beautiful grape Chardonnay, of which I am a huge fan. Don't giggle. The people in the studio have all seen me sip on Chardonnay and now they're all giggling, going, "Here, we know that you're a big fan." My first guest today is Executive Chef of the Atlantic, Donovan Cook. Donovan, welcome to Cravings.
Hello, Hilary. How are you?
I'm very good. I've just got everyone giggling at me a bit. I'm well. I'm very well, thank you, Donovan. I've had a busy morning.
Yeah, me too. I had to make duck spring rolls for my wife so she can roll them and then sell them to people. So
really?
Day off, yeah.
That was your day off. Where do you make them?
At home, so I had to get up early and do that before I started doing anything else.
How many did you make?
I don't make the rolls, I just make the fillings.
Oh, right. And how long does, how much filling? How many kilos?
I think it's about 10 kilos today.
Oh, God, doll. That's been busy.
Nice start to a day off, isn't it?
And so you're not going into service today?
No, off today. I have the weekend off now because I've got, quite a large bunch of kids.
Yeah.
They're all adults apart from one who's six, so I kind of figure I better spend some time with him at the weekend rather than wait until he's 20-odd.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. We're coming back to you in just a moment, but I'm going to introduce our other two guests in the studio today, which is the wonderful Mrs. Kate Bartholomew. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What a beautiful day. Thank you for having me, Hilary. I'm very honoured to be here.
Now, Kate Bartholomew is actually also co-owner, front of house, professional extraordinaire of Koda, Tonka and the very new... You pronounce it?
I'm going to say Otea.
Otea.
In restaurant life, I always believe it's incredibly important to make sure that your restaurant name is short, sharp, easy to spell and easy to say.
Right. And how many boxes have we ticked off with that one there, my darling?
I think with the first two we did really, really well.
Yes.
And on the third we did pretty badly. So it's Otea. But my business partners say Ote.
Okay.
And Flo, our French chef,
yes,
says it even more fabulously.
Well, he would.
So he would.
He can't help it.
But I love it. And basically it means to remove the unnecessary. It's a French term that they often use in French cookery.
Okay.
So, you know, talking about what's on the plate and making sure that, you know, the ingredients are the hero and, you know.
Well, it actually means something beautiful. And can we just tell the audience that it's spelt O circumflex, is it? T-E-R?
Yes, indeed. Right. Actually, I don't know what a circumflex is, but it sounds
it's
fabulous.
It's the little hat on the top of the O. Well, I think that's the only thing I remember from grade 10 French. I'm thinking.
Well done. I'm most impressed.
I think it is. But what I love is that we're talking about it. Even I said to you the other day, I said, yes. But look, we're talking about it. Even if we don't know how to say it, we're all trying to work it out.
Everybody knows how to say it but me. So, you know, I'm learning quickly and I'm just deciding which way I'm going to go with it. But
Keep us guessing. I'd like you to keep us guessing. I'd also like to welcome Gavin Cremming, your sommelier at Tonka. Am I correct?
And Coda.
Welcome, Gavin.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Welcome. First time on radio, I believe.
Oh, yes. Radio virgin.
It's over now, darling. It's done.
And it was painless.
You've got a great radio voice, but we will get back to you guys very soon. I'm going to actually jump... This one is a pun. Jump right in with Donovan and start talking about seafood, winter, books.
Yeah, it's pretty chilly
cooking.
Out there at the moment, but it's nice and sunny today, isn't it?
It's very sunny. A very quick disclaimer to everyone out there. Donovan and I, and we've talked about it on this show before, did write a book together. So we do some work together still. So I just wanted to put that out there straight away. But Donovan, you and I are very passionate about people eating seafood all year round. And I think, and we have talked about this before and agree, that it's often seen as a summer food, not as something in winter. And what's that all about?
Well, I've got a restaurant called The Atlantic. We do 1.5 ton of fish a week, 200 to 300 dozen oysters a day.
1.5 ton of fish a week?
Yeah.
Is that including crustaceans or just fish?
Just whole fish.
Gee.
Yeah, we caught all the fish there ourselves. And basically we do, over December, which is the worst time of the year to eat oysters, 2,500 dozen oysters a month.
And that's the worst time of the year to eat them.
Yeah, they're all spawning, they're all having babies and
yes, and
stuff.
which is kind of, actually, Kate, I'll ask you this question quickly. Do you get people wanting a lot of seafood at your place through the summer and not so much in winter across the restaurants?
Our menu is quite seafood heavy, and I find that people don't seem to mind. I find in our menus people move from seafood into richer meats and so on. So I find year round, people tend to start with a seafood, perhaps a white, a Riesling, or a Chardonnay, and then keep moving through the meal. So, you know, we're very pro seafood whole year round, and I think it's really important. The seafood's so beautiful in winter,
isn't it? Isn't it? But Donovan, tell us, why do you think people? Why is seafood so good in winter?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm English, and there's an analogy, and it's throw a shrimp on the barbie. So as soon as the sun comes out, everybody has barbies.
Yes.
Or eat raw seafood or raw oysters, and it's actually the worst time of the year. Now they're actually at the prime.
Oysters are wonderful at the moment. Where are they looking good at the moment, though?
Oh, basically they had a bit of a problem in Tasmania with a parasite, which is actually killing the... yearling oysters, the baby oysters.
Yes.
So they weren't developing, so they've stopped that now. South Australia is good. Basically, wherever the seas are coldest, it's always the best. The minerals come off the land, so as long as there's minerals running into the sea and the sea's cold, the oysters are always good.
What if someone always wants to have a plate of oysters at Christmas time in Australia, obviously? Are you just going to sort of... What would you say to them right now if they're listening? They're like, but every year we have oysters at Christmas.
I actually have to do some homework. So my supplier will open at least half a dozen oysters out of every sack I get.
Yeah.
And only sell... Normally I have 4 to 5 different oysters on the menu.
Yes.
Over Christmas period, I'll maybe have 1-2 maximum, depending on...
Oh, so there are some of that. It's about shopping around then, isn't it?
So basically you've got to go to the colder regions. Normally... Tassie are the best for the longest because it's a colder sea around there.
Yes.
New South Wales, they normally get spawning pretty early. And then, obviously, if they spawn early, then you can get them later on as well. So they're normally the first ones to spawn. Yep. And you can get them earlier than when the other ones spawn. But they developed something called a triploid.
Yes.
Which is an oyster that doesn't spawn. And basically, the farm went under because by the time they were ready... They weren't spawning anymore, so...
Oh.
the producer for no reason.
Is that called bad forward planning? You know, it's just like
that. I'd say.
Yeah, that's because I remember hearing about triploid oysters, but they are no more.
Oh, they still make them, but it's all about the timing. They're basically in the prime when the other ones are supposed to be spawning. But the guy who normally is the biggest supplier of them didn't get it right, so they actually weren't ready when the rest were.
And something else you're very passionate about is seasonality in seafood and the different types of fish to eat at different times of the year. But so in the wintertime, for people who are listening who love seafood or really want to cook more fish, what's if they're at the market, what are some of the fish to look out for or ask about?
This time of year, you're looking at the runs, which is in season. Basically, whiting at the moment's really, really good.
Yes.
I'm getting weighing up to like nearly 500 grams at the restaurant.
Really? So where is it, South Australian or somewhere?
South Australian, yeah. So basically it's all about the regions. Again, the salmon started to come good again. I get salmon from New Zealand.
Yes.
Basically there's been an issue over there again with the warmer weather, so on and so forth. So I was normally getting 5 to 6 kilo fish. Now I went for a spell of getting 3 to 4s. Mm-hmm. I told them I wouldn't buy it anymore, and now I'm getting 5-6 kilo fish again.
Isn't that funny?
Season just started again.
1.5 tons a week. I think, yeah, they might listen to the people at the Atlantic. But tell me, why do you get salmon from News? And it's farm salmon, I assume? Atlantic salmon?
No, I get Ora King salmon.
Yeah, and why do you get it from there and not Australia?
Basically because of the fat content of the fish. The salmon dish I do at the restaurant, and I've done in this restaurant, all the other restaurants I've had, is I comfort in olive oil, and basically the Ora King salmon's got a very similar fat content to a European salmon.
Yes.
And the texture, the flavour is, for me, superior to any other salmon.
When you talked about European salmon, but European fish, what are the fish that you miss that you wish you could cook with here?
Well, I miss the Mia, but when I go to Dubai, they'll all be on the menu, so it's really a case of, like...
There's a segue, if I've ever heard one. Yeah. What's happening in Dubai, Donovan? Tell us about what the Atlantic are doing.
We're opening a restaurant there in September the 19th. Atlantic Dubai, it's called.
How long have you been planning this? That's a huge undertaking.
We kind of signed the deal in just after Christmas.
Yes.
Everything's gone ahead, and I sent over the first... full recipe menu. You can remember writing a cookbook with me?
Yes, I can.
I've had to write 6 cookbooks in one menu because...
Oh, chef.
One menu is like you're going from basic stocks to sauces, things I take for advantage because my head chef's been with me for 13 years.
Yes.
I don't really need to give him a recipe. I meant chicken stock he already knows.
Yes.
But when you're going into a foreign country with a whole new brigade... then you got to kind of spoon feed them everything. So,
yes.
Yeah, I've just sent that first batch over.
That's huge. But how do you then, a sustainability question, because you can't go for local fish in Dubai, can you? So what are the sustainability points or facts that you need to look at when you're setting up a menu like that? Because you can get seafood from all over the world.
Well,
right?
I had a conversation with Pete Dillon around, what is it now, 12 years ago, and he called me a whore because I didn't give a fuck about my carbon footprint. That's what he said to me, sorry.
Yeah.
I called him other words, but I can't repeat them because
we're
a family show.
Anyway,
you have sustainable fish, but you have a carbon footprint, unfortunately. So I will be getting fish from Europe, probably two deliveries a week from the Rangis market in Paris.
Oh, wow.
Sea bass, turbot, monkfish.
Gurnard.
Mullet. No. Gurnard is a
different fish altogether.
No, gurnard's a good fish.
It's a bouillabaisse, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fish that was born to make soup out of.
Exactly.
It's not one of the premier fish.
We should talk primary and secondary fish in a little while, but we're just going to have a break for a sec.
Your community is our business. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Joy 94.9. This is Cravings. I'm Hilary McNevin, and I am filling in today for Pete Dillon, who is out in the Grampians sipping beautiful wine. If you have anything you'd like to talk to us about, you can contact us on Joy 0427 569 949. Call us on Joy 1300 569 949, or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Any questions you have for these amazing people that we have here who are doing extraordinary tasks and why I say task, opening a restaurant is nothing if it's not a task. Talking, Donovan Cook is here. He is opening a restaurant with his group, The Atlantic, in Dubai on the 19th of September. And I have Kate Bartholomew. And Kate, in the break, you brought up this point, and I think this is really interesting. Could you tell us, you asked Donovan what you asked him off air, because this is cultural differences in business, I think.
I think, honestly, I was a bit blindsided when Donovan just dropped in there that he's opening a restaurant on the 19th of September.
Yes.
And I was like, how do you know that? You know, I don't even know when our restaurant that's open right now, just soft opening, is going to open this week. You know, for me, like, it's just such a difficult process of, like, right, the menu's finally here, everything's in place, we're ready to go. And that was just amazing, the 19th of September, unbelievable.
But, Donovan, is that an actual compulsory an agreement, something you have to agree on before you actually open a restaurant in Dubai?
Basically, the building where the restaurant's going to be in is the IMA shopping group, or the biggest property owners in the world. And basically, they give you a deadline, an opening date, and after that deadline, if you're late, it's $10,000 US a day.
Oh,
fine.
Oh, my gosh.
So basically, I designed the kitchen in December.
Yes.
Specifications, equipment, list, plates, cutlery, crockery.
So 10 months out, you're doing all that?
I wrote the menus.
That's
four
unbelievable.
Menus.
Really?
A la carte, oyster bar, set menu, dessert menu, times four, because basically it's for a year.
Yep.
And each one of those has to be recipe method, so it's, every recipe is a similar sort of gig to a cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
How you make it, all that sort of stuff. So then it's been the first batch of menus sent off already. And they'll be costed on products I'll be using over there. So the specifications is, say, one of the cookbook dishes is a scallops baked in the shell. Over there it'll be Scottish scallops baked in the shell, three per serve.
Yes.
90 grams of cooked vegetables.
Wow. Standardised almost. So they just got everything. What's been your experience? How long did it take you to open OTER?
Yes. My husband, my other business partner, Michael, calls it Otter.
So Otter. I think we've got it.
Yeah,
Otter.
So we've got quite a few different names. So I'm saying go with anything that you like.
Let's call it
Otter. Every day I keep changing as well.
Until
I've gone
2 o'clock
with
O-Tang, today. Yeah?
You know, it just depends on my mood. but it will find its little personality.
It certainly will.
It's gorgeous already. But it's just such a, you know, like last night from service today, we'll go in there and go through our notes.
Yes.
And go through, right, what did work, what didn't work, what didn't we like? How's that dish going flow? What are you thinking about that? And he might change it a little.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a different process. And just to hear Donovan talking like that, I always wondered how anybody would open another restaurant, perhaps in another city, let alone on the other side of the world. So, you know, I'm in awe. But obviously, if you don't have these systems in place, you know, I can't even imagine it. You know, I keep our three restaurants are in one block.
Yes.
And we're always running between the three and always changing things. So
has this opening Otter, has it been easier than opening Tonka? Because I imagine the second business. Because you had, just to let everyone know, you had Coda first. How many years old is Coda now?
7 years old now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And then Tonka came along.
Tonka's now 3 years old.
Yes.
And Otter is now sort of about four services into soft opening.
Okay, what does that mean?
Let's call it trial, basically the dress rehearsal.
And can anyone come along to the dress rehearsal?
So basically, you know, anyone that's going to be kind and critical. So like my mum is a great example.
Yes.
So all of our mums.
Does all the staff's mums come in? Have
yes.
the mum table.
So all of our family bring in a notepad and they're like, Kate, no, we didn't. It's brilliant. So, you know, these people that, you know, will kindly deliver the information.
Yes.
Everyone's been wonderful and, you know, a couple of very small things to tweak, but I think we're very excited about where it is.
That's but was opening the second one more difficult than opening this one?
Excellent question. I think there was a lot more financial pressure with Coda and then on this one because it's a different partnership structure.
Yes.
With Tonka, we had some more financial freedom.
Yes.
And it was a much bigger project. So, you know, we had people like architects and things like that that could help. But with the other two projects, they were much smaller in scale. So you were doing a lot more. You know, we painted all the kitchen ourselves and all those little things where we could try and save money to get the doors open.
Yes.
So there's differences. I think the third time, well, for me, it's been much easier this time, but as well, it's a difference in partnership structure in that Tom and Flo are, you know, it's a Tom and Flo show. Mm-hmm. So Michael and I will no longer be working on the floor.
Tell us a little bit about Tom and Flo.
Yes, so Tom has been, I've worked with Tom for a decade at Taxi Dining Room, yes. And then we moved together and opened Coda.
What's his surname?
Michael and Adam. Tom Hunter. Mm-hmm. And he's just brilliant. You know, he's always been on the floor front of house, and now this is his first restaurant in terms of ownership.
Yes.
So he's managing everything, anything that comes his way. Mm-hmm. And then Flo. So Flo, we know from Pay Modern.
Yes.
And he's also been at Vue du Monde and then countless other restaurants, particularly in France. And he's just brilliant. I mean, his understanding of food and ingredients is inspiring. You know, I walk in there every day and I find some fabulous zucchini that I never thought could be as brilliant as it is.
I love it. All hail the zucchini.
Oh, it's amazing.
Any seafood dishes on there that you're excited about?
Actually, there's this fabulous dish. My favourite dish is a whiting
escabeche.
Yes, thank you.
That's okay.
And it's just beautiful. It was my favourite dish.
Donovan, isn't traditionally an escabeche used with oilier fish than whiting?
Normally, yes, sardines, yeah. Mullet, mackerel.
Yeah, so is whiting, that's just an interesting choice to me. Did you do things like that? Do you cure fish and have cured on the menu? So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing, say, over in Dubai and here. What are some of the similar recipes and menus?
Basically, the thing is with the recipes that we're putting on in Dubai, the tried and tested versions in Melbourne already. So basically, if I was going to use a barramundi in Melbourne, mm-hmm. say for instance a whole barramundi en croute cell stuffed with fennel, tomatoes, olives, I'll do that with sea bass, land caught by the link.
Yes.
If I do a flounder with vongolai, I'll do it with the turbot. If I'm going to do a whole grilled flounder, I'll do it with Dover sole.
Yes.
Mullet's mullet, sardine.
Yep.
Lobster, I'll do Brittany lobster dishes. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a classic with a bit of a twist on it. Lobster thermidor, I'm doing that. But wow. It's got a truffle sabayon instead of parmesan sabayon.
Hi, so what are we all going over? This is the thing. So who's your... from the 19th of September.
Yes, indeed. I can plan it.
I'm actually still on the hunt for a head chef. I'll be doing that.
Tell us a bit about what you're looking for. Put it out there because I think that's interesting.
Basically, I'm recruiting a chef. I've got a couple of candidates. Somebody who's going to work with me for a couple of months before I go over to Dubai. You're basically going to be working in close proximity with me. As I say, I've done a year's worth of menus, but the candidate who gets the gig will be able to utilise all the dishes to change it. It's like in the cookbook, I give you options of proteins can be changed, the garnishes mm-hmm. can change, the sauces can be changed around. Mm-hmm. So basically with 1 year's worth of menus, I think there's nearly 1,000 recipes that I've got to send over.
Yes.
You can make 6 extra menus.
So if you're looking at a move to Dubai, or if you know any chefs here or overseas, it doesn't actually matter where they are living now, does it?
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, as I say, I want somebody who's keen, enthusiastic and wants to represent the brand, because this is not the first one in the chain. There's going to be several after this one.
Where are you looking after Dubai? Are you allowed to say?
I'm not telling you. I've got to wait until September the 19th. And I'll let you know.
All will be revealed.
If it's the 20th, I'm being tape shit. Oh,
So anyway, Gavin, let's talk to you for a minute, because you have head sommelier. You work with Travis Howe.
Yeah, I work very closely with Travis Howe. Been working with him for the last, say, 4 or 5 years.
Okay, and in terms of Tonka and Coda, that's where you are now.
Yep, both restaurants.
And what is involved in your job? Because I think people hear the word sommelier all the time, but what do you, you know, do they just drink a lot of wine? What do you do?
We do. It starts that way,
yes.
And then we end up in this field. But basically, the idea is that we are trying to guide people into drinking the right wine.
Yes.
You know, the idea is that people are going to drink what they want to drink,
yes.
And we're there to help them make that decision.
Can I question that statement? Because people are going to drink what they want to drink.
Yep.
But if they say, can I please have a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc?
Yep.
And you think, oh, but that wouldn't be really good with anything. Sorry, I just had a moment.
Sure.
No, but that wouldn't be really good with the dish they've just ordered.
How about bourbon and coffee? Yeah. I got a few of them on
the side. I did have a quick aside, but someone once told me about a man that would always come in and have a dozen oysters with a bottle of Barossa Shiraz.
Right, yeah. It does happen. And
it does happen.
To my joint now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was at the Atlantic.
And I think, look, that's that great thing of people are going to drink what they want to drink regardless, you know.
Yes,
and
so how do you steer them? You see, I think that takes talent.
I can't tell you all my tricks. You have to come into the restaurant to see them. No, but no.
Mate.
But seriously.
But if someone ordered a dish and they ordered a set, for want of a better example, but New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and you just thought, man, that's just not going
to
work.
There's a gentle way to do it.
Okay.
You know, you can always suggest other options.
Yes.
Suggest other options and maybe take them in another direction that's not going to be too challenging for them, for example.
Okay. And yep. What I love and what I think is a great highlight of really good wine service is when people, you may say, and I'm sure you've actually, when we've been in the restaurant, have a taste of this. Just, yes. I've got something open, or try something else, yep. Or have you ever tried
Yeah, which I think is a great thing if you have presence of Somms on the floor.
Yes.
And which we do in both restaurants at all times, lunch and dinner.
Yes.
You have the opportunity to be able to take people down that path at all times.
Yeah, and do you have any people that just won't budge? Oh. I'm imagining that would be often. Because people, it's their money. They know what they like. It's what they want. And they're like, no, I just want the...
Yeah, like the gentleman that drinks Barossa Shiraz with oysters. I'm sure he never sways.
No, it'd be lovely if
you can try. Yeah, exactly.
He might have the oysters kill Patrick. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead.
You can try. You can always try in a nice, gentle way, but you don't ever want to make people feel like they've made an inferior decision. They're there to dine. They're there to have a good time.
That's the main
purpose.
So, look, we're going to go for a quick break, but then we're going to talk about lovely things like Chardonnay.
G'day, I'm Pete Evans, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome back to Cravings. I'm Hilary McNevin. You're on Joy 94.9 and I am sitting in for the lovely Pete Dillon this afternoon. It's 1:32 on a sunny Saturday afternoon in lovely Melbourne and we are talking to Donovan Cook, Gavin Creming. It's a long story. And Kate Bartholomew. Thank you all. We were just talking to Gavin. We were talking to you about what a sommelier does. And I just wanted to touch on, I bet some of the bad stuff or the boring stuff of your job would be stock taking.
Yes, like tonight.
Okay.
Last day of the month.
Yes, yep. And you do that every month?
Every month.
And do you do any kind of, through the month, look after the stock and that sort of, like, how do you, or is it just one big, huge, is it a six-hour task, a two-hour task?
We've narrowed it down to maybe 3 or 4 hours tonight.
Yeah.
We'll finish it in 3 or 4 hours.
How many of you do that?
There'll be two in each venue.
Okay.
Roughly. But, yeah, we do try and keep a little bit of a rough understanding of what we already should have in both venues. So if there's any discrepancy or, you know, sometimes the owners like to take a bottle home here and there.
Never.
Yeah.
Not the Bartholomew, surely.
I was going to say, Gavin, if Gavin sees Michael or I with a bottle of wine, he's like, wait, where are you going?
Yes.
We're probably going home with it.
But do you have to, I guess, Kat, well, it's part of the business plan, isn't it?
Yes.
You've got to keep in charge or on top of the stock.
Yeah.
But how do you find the right sommeliers? Because in a world where we're all screaming for staff and restaurant people tell me all the time it never gets easy, how do you have a great retention rate?
Been really, really lucky. Like, Gav's been with us for 7, 6.5 years since the start, and most of the core have been with us. So we rarely externally bring in individuals, and we quite often, you know, do a lot of training. We do tastings all the time, and the guys sort of groom them, train them, and then we employ from within.
You have a very strong wine culture within your businesses, which I think not every restaurant. I mean, you said there's a sommelier on the floor every service.
Correct. At least one.
What drove that decision in the very first place? Do you have a wine background, or Michael, or
no? You know, Michael coming from Movida, that, you know, a very different approach to wine.
Mm-hmm. But Michael is your husband, by the way.
Business partner. But me coming from taxi, you know, it was sort of around the time Lincoln Riley was winning all these prizes, and then Trav as well. So the wine focus at Taxi was just huge.
Yes.
They have wine bars and these amazing lists and sellers, and I just sort of got caught up in the romance of it.
Yeah.
And Michael and I talked a lot about having a Somm, and we got lucky enough to get Trav.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's been amazing to get Wine List of the Year, Sommelier of the Year, and all these different other awards. So
that's,
you know,
Travis Howe, your head sommelier for the three businesses,
yep,
is
correct.
That right?
No, for Coda and Tonka.
Oh, okay. So
we've got Jordan, a terrific gentleman, Jordan from Dinner, Jordan Ma, who's come across, and he's fabulous.
Well done.
Yes.
Well done. So let's go. We're going to talk a bit about food and wine matching. We're going to talk about Chardonnay in particular. Tell us what's happening from tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So we've kind of been buried in Chardonnay for the last few weeks.
Is now, it Chardonnay?
Chardonnay, yes. I like it. Let's run with it.
Let's run with it. I know. Our dear panelist Mark is just like, please, really? It gets that bad? It does get that bad?
So, look, basically we've been cellaring down at the Deanery, which is a great little wine cellar just off Flinders Lane. We've been cellaring for the last maybe 6 and 7 years.
Wow.
So this is every year we do a Chardonnay month and a Pinot month.
Yeah.
So we're pulling everything out of our cellar and we literally put 6 extra pages in the front of our list for the whole of the month of May.
Right.
Chardonnay.
And Chardonnay. I feel like I should
rolls off the tongue.
Think of a song or something. That's it.
And then, look, basically it's a really exciting time for us, wine team. We all get to, like, rally together and just get around all these great wines we don't often get to look at from Chardonnays from all over the world.
So do you devise a menu then? Do you work with the chefs to devise a menu that will...
We do, yeah. We
have a Chardonnay focus?
Yeah, definitely. We are in the process of doing it, but we start adding, like, marrons and those kinds of things and eggs and things like suit certain foods and wine pairing.
Donovan, what's a couple of Chardonnay matches, or a couple of dishes you would put with any, like a Chablis or another kind of Chardonnay?
I like Chardonnay. I like Chablis personally, and I think it adheres itself really well to light, delicate fish dishes. Scallops with cinnamon and lemon.
Oh, yum.
Cry out to Chardonnay, and then if you're talking about Chablis, it's a little bit more minerally, so...
Yeah.
Maybe with the winter months, there'd be some form of truffle-y kind of mineral to go there with the scallops. Mm,
yeah.
So you get the sweet richness of the scallops and the truffle-y.
And you have a strong wine focus at Atlantic as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few bottles on the list there.
Yeah, I'll say. 1.5 tonnes a week, almost, not quite.
There's quite a lot of Barossa goes with oysters at the moment. And over the football season, the oyster and bourbon and coke match is quite strong.
So can we remind you, Atlantic is in Crown, so you have a diverse market, shall we say.
Oh, a diverse market. The funny comes out. It's like, I think at the weekend when it was Anzac Day, there was a couple of Collingwood guys refused to drink bourbon with Pepsi. He was actually going to go and shop for their own coke.
Oh, dull, really?
Yeah, so...
Paying customers, they can have... Well,
you need a Pepsi sommelier. Pepsi.
See, that's fascinating. Do you, and as a sommelier, front of house, if someone asks you for a bourbon and Diet Coke and, oh, no, I'm not having that Pepsi Max, thanks very much.
No, we can't,
No, you just nod and smile and do it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you have to.
Of course.
Yeah,
well,
of course.
You do.
You know, we've all had times in our life where we've drunk those things. But some people just never stop drinking those things. That's just how that goes.
Yeah, I think so. I think I can safely say, I think I did a Kahlua and milk, I remember, as a young kid.
Oh, yes.
Or teenager, sorry.
Yeah.
Young kid doesn't sound quite right. But I'm just thinking the bourbon and Cokes and things like that, is that, I guess that's really another story. Tell us a bit more about the wines that are drinking particularly well in the Chardonnay month,
In the month of Chardonnay, it's really good to get behind some really great local wines. I believe that there'll be some emphasis on Polpero wines at some point in the day today.
Yes, yes.
Which I'm sure we'll focus on later, but great local options. I think there's a lot of great stuff coming out of Mornington, Polpero being one of them. Coverdale's also doing a few wines out of Tumbarumba as well, with his Even Keel label, and out of Mornington as well, which are just good value Chardonnays that are great tasting. So,
what's some of the really fine nuances you'll find in the difference between the same vintage of a Chardonnay from Yarra Valley and Mornington? If I'm looking at a list and you're my sommelier and I want, and they're the same price for and I'm having, I don't know, a fish dish of some kind, and what's
I think you got to look at the producer. That's what we're there for.
Well, so
the producer that you're looking at. There's stylistic ways to make Chardonnay as well.
Yes, it's such an extraordinary grape to me because it can be, it's moody, it's reactive, it's subtle, it's big.
It comes in boxes.
It comes in boxes. It doesn't come in boxes. You can put it in a carafe. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You can do anything with it.
Yeah, so
and
look,
it's, you know, Burgundy is some of the best wine in the world, and it's Chardonnay. It's just tell us, like, the when I asked about Chardonnay in Yarra and Mornington, what are, I guess it's more about the climate and
Yeah, and there's microclimates within those places
exactly.
as well. So you do, when you go cooler climates, you are going to see like greener fruit, stone fruits, those kind of things. When you get warmer climates, so say sometimes mm-hmm. parts of Lower Yarra Valley or hot years, you do start seeing more kind of riper stone fruits, even some bordering on tropical fruits. Not so much there, but maybe when you're going Margaret River, you get a warm year like that, you start seeing a bit more of the tropical fruit character as well.
Okay, and Kate, what drove you guys to actually make this a Pinot Noir month and a Chardonnay month and not a
Travis
Shiraz
and Gavin?
Oh, okay. Because most wine nerds, they're the two favourite grape varieties still, aren't they?
Yeah,
in a world
fabulous.
They are.
And they're just, I mean, Chardonnay's versatility is pretty amazing. You know, it's very hard to not find a Chardonnay for every individual.
I know. In a box, not in a box.
Yes, exactly, as you were saying.
With ice.
So,
not with ice.
With ice.
Yeah. It can do anything.
It was the boys that drove it. And also sometimes the accountant says, please, can you clear the cellar? These boys find an allocation and off it goes, and the credit card gets swiped and then it sort of goes this magical place and it appears on the P&L statements every month, and the accountant says, can you please sell some of the wine in the cellar?
Oh,
so,
wow.
It's so really nice to be able to, you know, have this wine that's collected and aged and been cellared.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's time to give it a new home.
That's exciting. Hey, and what is also exciting is we've got on the line Pete McLean.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And it's 1:44 on a Saturday afternoon on Joy FM. You're listening to Cravings. I'm Hilary McNevin, filling in for Pete Dillon. And I have on the line the one of the winemakers from Popero Winery in the Mornington Peninsula, Pete McLean.
Yes. Hello, Hilary.
How are you? Welcome to Cravings.
Good. Yeah, hi there. Good to speak to you.
Look, we're talking all things restaurants and dining, but mostly seafood and Chardonnay today. And I believe that you guys have got a Chardonnay event coming up.
We do. We're teaming up with Michael Dillon from Bindi Wines over in Macedon, and we're going to put on a 3-course meal and Spirico wines, and then two rather passionate winemakers are going to get up and tell everyone
about how beautiful Chardonnay is.
Yes, exactly.
Tell us a bit about your role at Pulpero.
Yeah, so I manage the vineyards and also assistant winemaker to Sam.
Yes.
I have been for 4 years and get to work with a few different sites, most notably the Mill Hill Vineyard right up the top of Mornington Peninsula.
What do you guys grow? Do you only have Chardonnay and Pinot Noir? Or
no, we've got Pinot Gris as well, and then a small patch of Gewurz Tremina on the Pulpero site. But, mostly Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, the two
favourites.
Varieties.
The ones we all love.
Indeed, yes.
And what was it about? Well, firstly, who thought of the name Chardonnay? Because I've completely stolen it and used it today. So whose little gem was that?
Ooh, I actually don't know. I'd love take credit, it's not me.
Go on, then. Go on, no one
Sam's
will know.
Creative. I'll give it to Sam.
Okay.
I'll pay Sam
it
for
sounds
that one.
Like a Sam thing.
Yes, that was Gavin. Yeah. Gavin from Coda and Tonka's here.
G'day, Gavin.
Hello.
where he was talking Chardonnay before, and the versatility of Chardonnay you were about to touch on. Is that. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it is. And from a drinker's sense, it's a versatile one, but in particular, from a winemaker's point of view, it's just so fun. You can, you've got quite a wide picking spectrum, a bunch of different fruits that'll go through in its ripening process, and then there's obviously the malolactic barrel fermentation, and how long you have it sitting around the winery for.
Yeah,
it's a whole lot of fun. And
see, I love that. You don't often hear winemakers talk. Well, I talk about just, you know, how much fun a particular grape can be, and one of what's the boring one in the vineyard? That's what I want to know. What's the grape that isn't fun? That's not dwelling.
In the vineyard, Pinot Noir in particular, the MV6 clones are
a
troublesome clone to grow.
Why?
It's just vigorous, and the bunches are, by the time they're 15, 20-year-old vines, they're tiny little bullets that are hard to find when you're picking. And But that adds to the whole
challenge.
And challenge of growing Pinot Noir. But Chardonnay is quite a cooperative
And what's your favourite style of Chardonnay?
A truthful one.
Don't lie. It'll get you nowhere.
Yeah, just a nice, honest one that's not trying to be too big or too over the top.
I love it. Sorry, I misunderstood you. So you mean a wine that just really tells the truth of where it's from and how it's grown and how it's treated.
It's not clouded over by anything in particular, and like all good wines, it's in balance, and whatever you do to it isn't overpowering.
And how can people find out information about the Chardonnay dinner? It's on May 20th, I believe.
It's Friday, May the 20th.
Yeah.
You can hit up the Polpero website, www.polperowines.com.au.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty of information on there.
And do you know who's the chef cooking?
Our chef from Polpero, Daniel Kerikas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he'll be putting on the three-course meal. Wines to match. We finish off with some Pinot Noir just because.
Well, you should.
Cool climate wines.
Yes. And I think, is it correct that you guys, Polpero and Bindi, will have two wines per course? Like an example
of
a Chardonnay?
We'll start with the 15 vintage.
Yes.
Because it's a young wine, but also the 15 vintage was just a cracker. And
great.
Is that
across the Mornington Peninsula or across. Is it considered
Southeast Australia, I think.
Great.
Macedon and Mornington both excelled in 15 vintage. So
everyone
we'll start
out
the Chardonnays off from 15. Oh, yeah. Wait till all the 15s are out there. It's going to be a lot of consumption.
That's unusual in the hospitality world, let me tell the winemaking world. Thank you.
Yeah.
Pete, thank you so much. I think it's $115
$115, yeah.
Yep. And people can jump online and have a look. And will you be there to meet people as well, even if you're not talking?
I will be, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be communal tables.
Is that at your place? Peninsula?
At the Polpero Bistro on Red Hill Road.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Hopefully we'll see you there.
You will. Look forward to seeing everyone else there as well.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
See you, mate.
Bye. Right, that was lovely. Okay, more Chardonnay talk. Let's go. What sort of style do you like best?
Depends on the day. Sometimes the day might say Chablis. Other times it says Meursault or Saint-Aubin. So it just depends. But it's always a Chardonnay kind of day, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
But that's here nor there, what I think. But, Gavin, you have the wonderful, I'm thinking Coda, I'm thinking the betel leaf with smoked ocean trout.
Yes. Yep. That's good.
What am I going to drink with that in terms of Chardonnay? I could have a Chardonnay with that, couldn't I? Smoked fish and Chardonnay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I
think maybe going with that more Chablis focus like we were talking before, a bit of a salty, flinty kind of character works pretty well with that.
Yeah. Do you think, and I'm not just questioning people's ignorance or anything, a lot of people don't realise that Chablis is Chardonnay.
I'm actually quite, I'm fine with that though, because usually people who drink Chablis are the people that don't like Chardonnay, for example, but they like Chablis. So I'm cool with that ignorance. I can go with that.
Yeah.
Because it means they're drinking Chardonnay and they don't know they're drinking it.
Okay. So we're kind of slowly educating them.
Yeah. Easing them in again, as I said.
Yeah. It's where do you think that, I suppose we said before, people drink bourbon and Coke and never, and when they're young, some people never grow out of it. Have you actually watched a palate or any of you, a customer evolve, a regular customer?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then you start seeing, hang on, they're trying this now and they're actually getting into ordering some different food or ordering fresh oysters. Is that...
Yeah, it's been a great journey just working for Kate and Michael for such a long time, seeing a lot of the same customers coming in and then going on that journey. A lot of the time when people first come in, they know what they like, they know what they want, and then they have that moment where they earn your trust. From then on, have them in a spot where they can always try new things. And it's a great journey. It's not like you're just giving them wines because you want to sell these wines. You're giving them wines that are going to be great with certain foods.
Yes.
So taking them on that journey takes them to broadening their palate, broadening their mind and their whole style of dining.
And trust, and they feel safe with
you.
I don't know about you, Donovan, at the Atlantic. You'd have a lot of regular customers.
Oh, yeah, I'm just making fun about talking about the bourbon and coke.
No, you'd have... Well, you have...
Yeah, of course. You've got a big restaurant, you're going to get them. But, I've got a... You know, that's why I've got 450 labels on the wine list. It's something on there for everybody.
Yes. And so, you've watched regulars come in and hopefully try different things?
The thing is, we try and do things like putting Bass Philip Chardonnay on by the glass, or Bannockburn Chardonnay, or some good quality Pinots or good quality wines and opening them rather than standard format wines by the glass.
Yes.
Charge a little bit more and people get to taste something which maybe wouldn't be able to afford a bottle.
So. No, exactly. And Kate, what about and your approach in that as well? Is it, gosh, if you've been at Taxi for a long time and then came to the restaurants, I imagine you'd have people that have followed you from Taxi to there.
Yeah, it's terrific. And Michael's often like, oh, that's my regular from Movida. You know, he'll still say that, like, you know, 10 years later or whatever it might be. So I find, you know, that Melburnians are very loyal, but they're also sort of always trying new things. And I think that it's great that, you know, hopefully all the different price points around town mean that we can, you know, dine in different times and you can just pop in for a couple of oysters and a glass of champagne, and it doesn't have to be such an expensive experience of sitting down for a lot. So I think, you know, you gain regulars just by the versatility of prices and food in Melbourne, which is fantastic too.
Yeah, but you also create, and you would have to have done this as well, and having when you have a culture of regulars, and what you touched on, Gavin, the idea of trust and having people, because dining out, if you don't know a dining room, is a risk. You know, you're walking in, you don't know, and you've created all of that, you know, in all your businesses, and the Atlantic and your three.
Mm.
How do you do that?
I think that's a really good... A lot of people ask me that question. For me, I take comfort in my own experience, whereas, you know, if I ever go out and I don't have a good experience, I feel better about what I go to work and do every day. Yeah. But if I go and have a great experience, I'm like, oh, it was just it was great. So I sort of hope that people are quite... I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right. No, that's absolutely fine, because it's about creating. That comes with time, but also you have to have people come in for the very first time to want to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and for me, it's about, and I, you know, from front of house experience, you have to create that immediacy of comfort and safety and trust, and maybe they won't order. They'll stick with what they always order.
But yeah, exactly.
But you have to make them kind of go, oh, let's go back there again.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? That sort of was my question. How do you do it, Donovan? Like, how do you keep getting people coming back in?
I think we deliver a quality product with a good ambience, a reasonable price, and people come back for it because, you know, at the end of the day, everybody works hard for the dollar. They want value for money and a good experience at the end of it.
Yes, so it's about being consistent, isn't it, as well?
It's all about. All of our restaurants are all about consistency.
We're just going to have a quick break. We'll be back in a sec.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime. joy.org.au.
And you're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9. My name's Hilary McNevin. I've been looking after Pete Dillon's seat today, and it's been a great pleasure. We have to wrap up the show, but Gavin, I would love you to just tell us a little bit more about Chardonnay. I'm just going to keep saying it, and you know I'll be there. Well, can we get it at all the restaurants? What's happening?
No, it's just focused at Coda Restaurant.
Okay, where's Coda?
Coda Restaurant's at 141 Flinders Lane, so just near the corner of Russell Street and Flinders Lane in the basement.
Okay.
Yep. And all the information we have up, if you like our page on Facebook, we're just constantly putting things up, so you'll be able to see what's going on.
And just if you could go over that again, there's 6 pages of Chardonnay.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah, 6 pages, and they'll be
decreasing
rapidly.
How many by the glass?
Oh, the by the glass section will stay, but we'll always have a premium pour that we'll be doing every night for something special by the glass. That'll be off the list. That'll just be Sommelier's Choice wine.
Oh, so there'll be a Chardonnay, but only one of those?
We're always pouring one specific Chardonnay for our by the glass options.
Okay.
But we'll have one premium pour from the Chardonnay list that we'll do in
I'm just clarifying because I think I'll be in tomorrow.
Plus, you have all the half bottles as well. Don't forget about those.
I might bring a friend then, you know. But no, thank you so much. So 141 Flinders Lane. Kate, tell us a little bit about, Tonka and what, just the spices and this.
Yeah, sure. So Tonka is our Indian restaurant. So my business partner, Adam, our executive chef, is half Indian, half Italian.
Yes.
So it was always a bit of a journey following his paternal heritage. And so we've got a lot of quite modern Indian dishes, and it's just this fabulous kind of exotic food. And I just love working there and going there. So
yes. And where can we
Flinders
find
Flinders Lane? Well, it's actually Duckboard Place at the bottom, but it's just off Flinders Lane. So, you know, about 5 doors up from Coda.
And Otter?
Yes. Otter is looking at Coda. So it's the old site of Yu's, that fabulous Japanese restaurant.
Can't wait.
So they
to
look
come
at
have
each
look.
Other on the corner of Oliver and Flinders Lanes.
And are you open every day?
Yes, so Coda's open lunch and dinner 7 days. Yep. Tonka's closed on Sundays. And Otter is not open yet, but opening this week. We'll be closed on Sunday and Mondays just till we find our feet.
So you're opening on Tuesday lunchtime?
Yeah, no, not lunchtime. We're going to aim to be opening Tuesday night,
okay.
But we've got a few things to clarify over the weekend, but just keep an eye out on the website and we'll be going live as soon as we're ready to take
what's the website?
It's otter.com.au.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Donovan, very quickly, that fish and chippery, just tell us in 25 words or less. No, but you've got an amazing fish and chippery that's opened right next door to the Atlantic.
Yeah, that was a little project that we did on Christmas Eve last year.
Yeah.
It took 6 weeks to build it. We do some classical stuff,
mm-hmm.
British combo, because my nana had a fish and chip shop for 50 years in Hull. So beer battered flake, mushy peas, English potato cakes, pickled onions, chips.
Yeah, it's very, very
And then we do weird
beautiful.
Stuff like, it's weird. It's, was it squid ink brioche bone with a yuzu marinated rocklin and wufu salad. And, yeah.
You're having a lot of fun?
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun. We do, we've got a gig every Tuesday now. We do $2 oysters.
How many days a week is that?
It's on a Tuesday, $2 oysters.
I just thought I'd say that again. How many that Tuesday? And do you get Chardonnay with that? If we can, is there Chardonnay available to have with the oysters?
The oysters are $2 you can buy. Whatever you like. Maybe my regular with the Barossa Shiraz will be in for some.
So, and tell everyone where Atlantic is, if they're not.
The Atlantic's in the Crown Casino on the promenade overlooking the Yarra.
Beautiful. Well, Donovan Cook, Gavin Cremming, Kate Bartholomew, thank you all for being here today. Thanks to Pete McLean. Thank you to Mark, our panellist. And Pete will be back in the hot seat next week.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.